This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp with 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, coming to you with another important update from the Sacred Stone Camp at Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. In a press release by the Standing Rock Sioux Nation regarding the UN experts validating their opposition to DAPL, Standing Rock Sioux highlighted that Ms. Tauli Korpis called for the United States government to take action to halt the pipeline was endorsed by other United Nations experts, including Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights Defenders, Mr. Michael Forst, Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights to Safe Drinking Water and Sanitation, Mr. Leo Heller, Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and the Environment, Mr. John H. Knox, Special Rapporteur on the Rights to Freedom and Peaceful Assembly and of Association, Mr. Maina Kiai, Special Rapporteur on Cultural Rights, Ms. Karima Benounce, UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and Hazardous Substances and Waste, Mr. Basket Tuncock, and current Chairperson of the Working Group on Business and Human Rights, Mr. Pavel Zulyadziga. During this recent appeal to the United Nations, Standing Rock Sioux Chairman David Archambault II invited Ms. Tauli Korpis to visit Standing Rock and witness for herself the escalating violations against Indigenous people and the land and water of the region. The UN expert got it right, said Tom Goldtooth, director of the Indigenous Environmental Network. What the U.S. calls consultation is not consultation, but a statement telling people what they're doing after millions of dollars have been invested, painting Indigenous peoples as spoilers. The right of free, prior, and informed consent begins prior to the planning process, not when the bulldozers are at your doorstep. Radio 550 AM in Wausau and 99.9 FM in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, reported, the United Nations wants the Dakota Access Pipeline halted. A UN Special Envoy for Indigenous Peoples is formally asking the United States to halt construction on the four-state pipeline. The UN's Victoria Tauli Korpis says the pipeline poses significant risk to the drinking water of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and asserted in writing the tribe has been denied information and excluded from consultation, adding the federal government of the United States needs to undertake a thorough review of their compliance with international standards and obtain the tribe's free and informed consent, also adding that reportedly peaceful protesters have been intimidated, harassed, and prosecuted. Let's turn now to our reporter, Annie Winter, who attended the March for Standing Rock at NDSU on Friday, September 23rd, where she interviewed several attendees of the event, including congressional candidate Chase Iron Eyes, who also spoke at the event.
All right, this is Annie Winter with KPPPLPFM 88.1, and I am here with...
Chandra.
Chandra, and what brings you here today?
I just felt like, you know, this issue isn't just an Indigenous issue, it's a human rights issue, a human issue. We all need water to live, and I am unable to get out there and actually be out at Standing Rock, so I thought this is what I could do to show my support and help the cause.
That's really incredible. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Annie Winter with KPPP LPFM 88.1 Fargo-Moorhead, and I am here with...
Tyrell Iron Eyes.
Tyrell Iron Eyes, and where are you from, Tyrell?
I'm from Standing Rock.
Excellent. So what brings you all the way here to Fargo?
I go to school at NDSU. I'm a mechanical engineering major.
Excellent. And you want to tell me a little bit why you're marching today?
Because if anything happens on Standing Rock, it's going to affect me no matter where I am. Standing Rock is and always has been home for me, and it always will be home. Anything that happens there is going to affect me, whether I'm 20 minutes away or 20 hours away.
Right. And for anyone who has never been to Standing Rock before, what would you want them to know about your hometown?
That we're friendly. We're people there. We're not all... stereotypes. We're all individuals. Not all of us are a stereotype.
And then from what you've heard from folks back home, what is your feeling on the Obama administration's decision to halt the DAPL construction?
That decision is part of why we're marching, because it's, when people hear that he halted it, they think that it's done. It's not. The pipeline is still being constructed. There's still a chance that it'll go. We have to keep fighting this pipeline. He didn't stop it dead in its tracks. He just kind of delayed it a little bit. It's up to us to finish it.
In terms of what people in Fargo here can do and what you'd like them to know, far away from Standing Rock, what would you like them to know?
If you really want to donate, if you really want to help and you don't know how you can donate, there's an official link on the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe website. And if you can't donate, we appreciate any support you can give us. Just knowing that you guys support us is more than enough.
All right. Thank you so much. This is Annie with KPPP LPFM Fargo Moorhead, and I am here with
Geneva Goodbear.
Geneva Goodbear, and where are you from?
I am from the Fort Berthold Reservation. I'm also a Navajo from the Arizona, yeah.
Okay. And what brings you here to Fargo?
I'm going to school here for mechanical engineering.
Okay. At NDSU, just to clarify. And what made you decide to march today?
I guess just the protection of our lands and also our sovereignty. For the Fort Berthold tribe, the Army Corps of Engineers moved our people to another location, and they called it eminent domain. And I'm sure most people know what that is, I hope. And so with that, they just moved an entire tribe, and that had some devastating effects for us. And so they're doing the same thing to the Standing Rock Sioux. They're using eminent domain to put the pipeline through the water, so, you know, the lake. And I just think that in this day and age, we should be well educated and not let that happen to us. I mean, I think we have a lot, yeah, I guess that's why I'm here, just to protect our sovereignty. And because, I mean, it just, the eminent domain from the Army Corps of Engineers just has just a devastating effect. And like a lot of people are saying, that it would destroy the water there, so it would pollute the water. So that's why, I guess.
What would you like the people of Fargo here that see us marching today, what would you like them to know about what we're doing?
I just hope it brings awareness to tribal sovereignty. I mean, really, I was always with the Standing Rock people, but it wasn't until I saw them be attacked by dogs. And then, if they're a sovereign tribe, then they should be able to call in the National Guard to remove them, if you think about it. So I'd really like people to start thinking about that. You know, we're still here, we're still alive, and it's kind of almost, in a way, continuing on genocide, if you really think about it, because you're attacking the water source. And yeah, so I'd really like them to start thinking about these issues.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for speaking with me. This is Annie Winter with KPPP LPFM Fargo Moorhead, and I am here with Chase Iron Eyes at the March for Standing Rock at NDSU. Chase, you want to tell me a little bit about why you're here today?
Yes. Well, I'm here because I care about the future of our state, the integrity of our natural resources, the integrity of the true sources of all economic value in Western society, in a society that is dominated by financial industrial complex. That's to say nothing of the other complexes like the military industrial complex, but in a world that has forgotten where true value comes from, I think it's important that young people, that students and others who support them get together to send that message, because this is where democracy lives. This is where democracy comes from. And for me, I happen to be running for United States Congress right now. This is the only way that I win this election. I don't win by appealing to moderate Retrumplicans in North Dakota. I win by bringing more millennials, younger people, Native American voters, true nonpartisan leaguers, and progressive voters across the state. We don't have to be afraid or ashamed about our progressive stances anymore. This is a new day and age, and I think it's time that we take back our state and our democracy.
Today, an article came out by Rob Port criticizing some ideas that you had about keeping refineries here in North Dakota. I wouldn't say it was the most well-informed article in the world. How would you respond to that very quickly?
Well, Rob Port should thank me, because every time he mentions my name, there's a lot of activity on his site and on his personal Facebook page. If you look, I mean, there's no... He's been baiting me for a long time, but I finally thought, you know what? I should respond to this, because what he was engaging in is a complete mockery of leadership that is trying to make decisions, trying to reach out and create opportunity, create a space for a solution. Because I can no longer afford to be a one-issue leader. I don't have that luxury anymore. So for me to even say that a reroute of the pipeline is something that I'm open to, I lose a lot of my activist friends, which is okay, because I'm also trying to represent the entire state of North Dakota. Mm-hmm. The Bakken is one of the top 10 oil plays in the world. And I'm all for regenerative technologies, renewable energy, that our leadership should be creating the environment that incentivizes that kind of future development. But we also are stuck with 120-year-old infrastructure, physical, political, legal infrastructure that incentivized fossil fuels. We use 20 million barrels of oil every day, but we can't sell out to outside development. Any development has to be on our terms, North Dakota's terms. So that's... But hey, Rob Port should thank me. October 13th, I'm debating Kevin Cramer on Rob Port's show. And so that ought to be like walking through a snake den. But I'm looking forward to it.
That's really excellent. Okay, so we're about to go in March here. What would you like the people of Fargo to know about what we're doing here today?
Well, I tell you what, I was once marching just like this back in my college days, and we didn't have social media back then. So even though it might look small because there's only 40 people here or whatever, we've done this with less than that, but now through technology the whole world can see a student-led movement here to show support. So that's why I came out.
Thank you so much, Chase. Right. Appreciate you talking to me.
This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp back here with you on this program. We're talking about Standing Rock. And now on the phone with me, I have Rebecca Adamson. She's the Cherokee founder and CEO of the First Peoples Worldwide organization. Rebecca has also co-authored The Color of Wealth, published back in 2006. She holds a Master in Science and Economic Development from Southern New Hampshire University, which is formerly New Hampshire College in Manchester, New Hampshire, where she also taught a graduate course on Indigenous economics within the Community Economics Development Program. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Oh, thank you so much. It's just a pleasure and honor to be here, but even more important for giving voice and getting the word out of what's going on up at Standing Rock. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, you know, I was just talking to Four Arrows about the recent developments about what is happening there. And I don't know if you were aware of the recent land sale of the Cannonball Ranch, but I wanted to bring...
I heard about it, but what... I mean, I'm not up to date on that. It's just beyond the story that I heard. So I would love to get more information.
Yeah, because actually I wanted you to maybe analyze it and tell us what you think this means. So the Army Corps of Engineers had given a conditional use permit for part of the encampment. And it was for the part of the encampment where the camp really wasn't. the entire ranch was sold. It was just announced that it was sold to Energy Transfer Partners on Thursday or Friday. And this was a very devastating piece of news to the people at Sacred Stone. But what is even more troubling is that the state of North Dakota has recently passed a law against corporate farming. So many people are arguing that the sale of the land itself was illegal, and that the Attorney General of the state, Wayne Stengem, is probably going to hem and haw, and the wheels of justice are going to crank slowly enough that by the time it is determined whether or not this was an illegal land sale, which it probably will be. But what was strange about this whole thing was that, you know, it was done in a very hush-hush fashion. It seems that the Army Corps of Engineers probably knew about this and didn't really say anything about it. There was a gag order, of course, in place, so they couldn't really speak about it publicly. But what do you think of the tactic and the possibility that by the time it is determined whether or not this land sale was appropriate or legal, that the energy transfer people may well have already laid their pipe and done the destruction?
Well, I think they're not going to be able to leverage the private ownership as much for their pipe. I think they might have been trying to do it as a sort of more of a way to get at the campsite and to try to get rid of the campers. Mm-hmm. You know, they want that camp dismantled. They do not want the visible, demonstrated opposition against this pipeline that camp represents and symbolically, more than symbolically, actually stands mm-hmm. for. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're seeing through the Energy Transfer Pipeline Partnership Group is, first, none of this is going to be investment advice, but you can, as a casual observer, see that it's a bad company. Mm-hmm. When you look at Bloomberg and the way that they rate companies, you go into the environmental and the safety performance of this company, and you find bad performance. And so what we're seeing is many, many, many of the investment firms that work with people actually are not investing in this company. They have passed on investing because of the poor, both environmental performance. This is a company that's being sued right now. Four lawsuits, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Vermont, and Louisiana, are suing this company, and get a load of this, for dumping hazardous material and contaminating groundwater.
Wow.
Now, is this the company you want building that pipeline? This is an outrageous, outrageous violation of its trustee responsibility for the government to even let this company near our tribal communities. What we're seeing is seven more states have cited, again, contaminating groundwater and dumping hazardous materials against this exact company. When we went in and began to research this company, I think the purchase of this ranch, and it has to do with the fact that they've never dealt with indigenous people before. They come out of Texas. Mm-hmm. They've been organized as an MLP, which is very different than an LLP. An MLP gives you preferential tax treatment. So in many ways, for me, what I'll say is like it's not even a real company, sort of. It's like this tax vehicle, break vehicle. So you don't even have a real company that's going to continue to employ employees for the next 50 years. You've got somebody wanting to come in quickly, make a lot of money, and get out. And consequently, when you look at their site, they say some things around sustainability. But again, when you're writing up a sustainability report, a company isn't required to be truthful. Mm-hmm. When they write up a financial report, they are required to be truthful. They have to provide you accurate assessments. Now, what we've seen again, if we're looking for the truth, the company itself has filed with the court that, and I'm quoting this out of their court filings, it could lose $1.4 billion in this year if the delay continues. Now, this was a pipeline that was budgeted for $3.4 trillion. So it's losing over a third of its investment before it's even gotten started.
Wow.
So this is a very frightened company. And I think it bought that ranch because it wants to dismantle the camp. buying the ranch isn't going to get at the issue of self-determination and free prior informed consent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really going to try to tie up that piece of the land. The company still, because it doesn't have this experience, thinks that it, if it breaks up the camp, you know, it's going to go on with construction. But there are lawsuits coming out of the camp and all the way down the path of the pipeline. Iowa has at least 12 lawsuits that we're aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes on and continues to say in the court filing. So you can, I mean, what I'm saying, ka-ching, 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 yes. Every time they turn around, this is going to cost them more money, not less. And what they've got now is that even a temporary or limited injunction could have devastating long and short-term impacts on the projects. This is a company that needs to disclose a material level of risk to the investors, and it hasn't even done that yet.
Mm-hmm.
As far as we can tell, the company hasn't brought its investors in for a full briefing on the both the identified risk through these protests and how it's going to mitigate these risks. Investors do not like risks. Now, they've said that the customer contracts would be permanently lost, if Dakota Access' delivery schedule isn't met. And that delivery schedule is January 1st, 2017.
Mm-mm.
So you're talking 3 months from now. If they're continued to be late, they're going to miss their schedule. And then they say in that 8,000 workers would be affected. Now, the way oil companies and pipeline companies and these extractive industries total up number of employees and workers, they go into the life cycle of the companies. So this 8,000 workers isn't a figure directly tied to the pipeline. They say 8,000 workers are going to be affected and lose their job. It's all of the subsidiary, like maybe the restaurant that was going to sell the employee a hamburger. The way they do the multiplier effect on this really jacks up the number of workers. Now, they're not called employees. That's the big difference on this, these kind of statistics.
Uh-huh.
But what they're saying is even a temporary delay would mean they're going to lose over $430 million. And this is from the company's mouth
mm-hmm.
telling us this. And just demobilizing the construction site will cost them $200 million. And they claim that these harms are irreparable. From our point of view, these harms are material risk that needs to be disclosed to the investors. So we think one of the things that, and again, this isn't an investment advice, it's just a matter of disclosing and being more transparent. And the SEC, Securities Exchange Commission, is really promoting much more disclosure and transparency among the extractive industries. I currently serve on the U.S. Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative. This government is under a very serious commitment to getting more transparency around these kind of operations. So you bring the fact that the government itself is wanting more transparency, and again the fact that the government recognizes it's not in, its national laws have not been harmonized with the international standards of free, prior, informed consent.
Mm-hmm.
Nor is the national law even harmonized to the true meaning of and the definition of meaningful consultation. Standing Rock holds that this was not meaningful consultation. It was notification, but not consultation. And that doesn't meet the intent of the law of self-determination just in the U.S., let alone the entire global international framework that requires broad-based community, free, prior, informed consent.
And so, can you speak a little bit about those investors? Because there's, you know, Standing Rock people have put out lists of different banks, for example, that are that were funding the pipeline and asking people to divest from those institutions, including one of the banks that has been in the spotlight recently with the big scandal, Wells Fargo. Could you talk a little bit about that?
I would think Wells Fargo would want to do something good right about now.
Yeah.
So you kind of wonder if any of them care about doing anything good. But It's a very credible strategy. I think the investors themselves, we've been holding investment webinars, and we've had, in a webinar sense, practically virtually standing room only for the webinars, and both the first line of investors, like, are the ones that I said have already passed on this company. They don't have anything in their portfolio because they saw bad performance. That first line of investors are call themselves responsible investors, or the more common term is ESG investors. ESG investors look at the finances of a company, but then they also look at the company's environmental, social, and governance practice. And how does the company behave in the, environmentally, socially, and through its governance? And on all three of those, this company raises questions. First of all, in the governance structure that we've looked at, there's absolutely not a single policy that this company has passed that provides indigenous rights or human rights or even guides meaningful community consultation and engagement.
Wow.
So there's no governing policy for this company to have directed it in any managerial sense around this kind of risk. So this is a huge red flag. They don't know what they're doing. They didn't know what they were doing until they got caught in the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
It's like headline management by headlines is what we call it. When companies are so incompetent that they can't even identify the risk, you can be pretty sure that means they can't even mitigate it either. And this is what you have the appearance of in how the Energy Transfer Partners is operating right now.
Mm-hmm.
They act like deer in headlight. Like this buying of the ranch was just such a miscalculated move. I would bet their lawyers have never had to deal with federal Indian law before. They're trying to get up to speed, and they're flailing like a fish out of water. What we're seeing in the second tier of investors, then, that you're talking about, is what we call sort of mainstream investors. But even mainstream investors, while they wouldn't put the environmental, social, and governance indicators front and center, they have all recognized, in fact, the largest investment fund in the world, BlackRock, which is, at, I think, about $5 to $6 trillion, has already written a letter to all of its all the Fortune 500 companies, telling them, as of this year, they are using ESG indicators in their financial decisions because they've seen the companies that are operating the best they can in ESG are better performing companies. So, you know, the word's out in the market right now. The ESG funders have passed on this company, and now you got the mainstream funders that, while they've invested, they're really the large institutional funders or index funds where the analyst isn't necessarily on, it's more by an algorithm. It's more invested by, an index fund invests more by the numbers rather than by looking actually at the company real close and going out and kicking the tires.
Mm-hmm.
These are the guys that are on the phone calls right now. These are the bank investors. And the bank investors are seriously concerned about whether or not they have been briefed on the full risks that are before them in this particular investment. So we're having a second webinar for investors this week on Wednesday. We had our first one, and we had about 50 investors, and with tremendous follow-up, all wanting more information on the E, the S, and the G.
Right.
Performance of the both Energy Transfer Partners and the subsidiary Dakota Access Pipeline.
Well, can you speak to the fine people of North Dakota about this particular topic? Because here in the state of North Dakota, the people are looking at the state government, the regulatory bodies that allowed this to happen, and they're saying, hey, everybody looked at this already. They dotted the I's, they crossed the T's, they did meaningful consultation with the Native Americans, because that's what we've been told, and we believe them. And we've been told that this pipeline is going to be the safest pipeline in forever of pipelines, and we believe that too. How could these folks be led so astray? What is your sense of how this got run through so quickly, and how Energy Transfer Partners was able to, and the state of North Dakota, able to make these determinations not only for the future of the water of the Missouri River, also the Oglala Aquifer underneath that, and how that's going to impact all of the people in other states that are downriver from this pipeline.
Well, I think one of the things that I would recommend that the people of North Dakota do is get a really good dinner together, get ready to sit down at the dinner, and watch an old John Oliver show where he really takes a look at the politicians and the level of corruption in the state of North Dakota around the oil industries. I would recommend they have a very good meal, because the show might just actually upset them.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the first thing, for the people in North Dakota to really get up to speed about the level of corruption that's operating in their government right now. I used to live in North Dakota. It used to be a wonderful government. It was a government that I think really authentically tried to speak for the people. Now, there's rumors that everything from the governor to attorney general own stock in these oil companies that really, really need this pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the rumors. I would say I would refer you to the John Oliver show.
Mm-hmm.
But in spite of all of that, it goes back to what I said earlier. At the very, very least, the people of North Dakota have the right to have a good company that really has a demonstrated track record in the environment and in safety to pull this deal off. Now, why in the world would the people of North Dakota believe for a second that a company that already has 11 states suing it, all for contaminating water, groundwater, and environmental hazards, is the right company to go with? That's the question that people in North Dakota have to ask. If you could be for the pipeline, but you better seriously question whether or not this company has the caliber of competence and technical capacity to build a pipeline that doesn't leak, especially when in 11 of the states where it's worked is already looking at its damage. So I think there has to be some extremely, I don't care if you're for it or against it, is this the company you want building it? And then I think you've got to peel from that question, you got to peel back whether and what you actually want to do, considering that most of the industry up there is still agriculture and ranching.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that we're going to be having very serious water supplies here in the foreseeable future. So why would you even risk polluting your water source? You know, they didn't. I mean, we all know the story was it was originally going to be up by Bismarck, mm-hmm. and the Bismarck people didn't want their water supply mm-hmm. threatened this way. So why do they think Indians want their water supply threatened? Or any of the farmers south
mm-hmm.
of us? This is wrought with all kinds of social, actually, opposition. People care more about their clean water than they do about a profit line for a bunch of rich Texans and North Dakota politicians. We've seen this too many times. I think it's a tipping point at this point. Ernst & Young, one of the huge big three audit firms, has already recognized that what they call non-technical risk is the third biggest risk that extractive companies face. Now, when they call it non-technical risk, what it really is it's above ground. You've got technical risk. Can they build a pipeline that it doesn't leak? Well, no, they can't. They've proven they can't. You know, so they don't. They've got their technical risk. They've got legal and financial risk. Do they have enough money to build a pipeline? You know, are they in compliance with law? But then they've got this other sphere of social risk, and this is where Energy Transfer Partners is hemorrhaging. It does not have the social license to operate in North Dakota. And the way it's conducted itself, arresting the chairman and the council people,
mm-hmm.
sticking it, the security thugs with the attack dogs, trying to buy that ranch out. These are all very underhanded tactics that tell you what this company's integrity is or isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that should lead anybody watching this situation to have very serious questions about the caliber and quality of the pipeline and actual work that they say they're committed to do.
Well, you know, a lot of people they have this worldview, and especially here in North Dakota, folks are very proud of the fact that there was an oil boom here. And where everywhere else in the country, people were economically strapped or going under, North Dakota was doing great. And it's all thanks to the oil. And by God, we have to get it out of the ground. And if we're not going to get it out on that pipeline, it's going to go out on the rail, or it's going to go out in trucks. And if you want that, you're going to have giant explosions all over the country. What would you say to the folks in the state that view this more of an argument against technology and against the building of infrastructure? Because you hear a lot of folks saying that the people at Standing Rock, they're just a bunch of hypocritical Indians, because they're always driving to the camp in their cars, and they're using, you know, petroleum-based products. So they really don't understand their own battle. They're fighting against the future.
Okay, so here's how great North Dakota is doing. If they think they're doing so fantastic, please explain to me what they're going to do in the next 5 years. So here's where we're at. This is the past 5 years. So my question was, what are they going to do the next 5 years? But mm-hmm. over the past 5 years, the oil production up in North Dakota has gone from the 200,000 barrels a day to 1.1 million. So it's become the second largest oil-producing state in the country.
Right.
Thousands of highly paid workers have flocked in, and within 2 years, the rate of murder, aggravated assault, and robberies has gone up 300%. In two years, murders have gone up 300%.
Mm-hmm.
Aggravated assaults have gone up 300%. Robberies have gone up 300%. Sex crimes, rape, prostitution, and human trafficking have gone up 25%. The Business Insider magazine summarized this highly successful region as, law enforcement says Bakken is a made-to-order market for sex.
Wow.
So how are they doing so great? What? This is a social pollution that's more toxic than any chemical you could release in the environment. They had 200 drug-addicted babies born up there in the past 2 years. How is this success? How is this great? I don't see North Dakota addressing it. I don't see North Dakota bragging about it. I don't see North Dakota even putting it in the news so that North Dakota people know what's going on and how successful they've been in the oil industry in North Dakota. And this is the Bakken region, and we analyzed every one of those companies working in the Bakken region. Not one of them had a human rights policy, a pro-woman's policy, and every single one of them knew about the sex trafficking and just assumed it wasn't their liability.
But what about this idea that this pipeline is helping not just North Dakota, but the country become more energy independent? Because
we're
going
to become energy independent on alternative energy. We're not going to become We are never going to achieve a goal of energy independence off of fossil fuel. It's impossible because we're going to run out. Therefore, the only way, unless you're some kind of special stupid that you can't get, we're going to run out of fossil fuel anyway. So, you know, the peak is over for Bakken already.
Mm-hmm.
Production's going down. There's hardly a margin of profit in this industry the way there used to be. So, we might shelve it for a while, but the days of it going back up, like the good old days, are actually over. And people are going to start seeing it's economically more feasible to do alternative energy. I mean, they're already seeing that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so they just want to do, this is about short-term money. It's not about sustainable investing. It's not about what's good for North Dakota. It's about grabbing some money in the next 4 years, because this pipeline won't even be viable after that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for educating our audience. I love having experts like you to talk about the real substantive issues around this, because so much of what goes on, unfortunately, especially in our mainstream media, is rumor and innuendo, and it's not sourced information. It doesn't really talk about in depth about all of these issues that we've been discussing here today. So I greatly thank you for that. Especially our listeners will be thanking you for that. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us where people can find more information about the First Peoples Worldwide organization and how they can email you or contact you with questions or follow up.
Well, first I'd like to ask the listeners to really think about donating to the Standing Rock Tribe. It's under a tremendous responsibility out there, and it really does need help getting the security and the medical and all of the support services that it needs for the camp. So go on, you know, Google Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and really look at making a donation directly to the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
For us, one of the things that the readers might be listening to, we did a risk assessment of all of the U.S. oil, gas, and mining companies. And if you go onto our website, and that's just www.firstpeoples.org, and you go under corporate engagement, and we have all of the, in fact, we have a list of the banks on the website, and we have a list of all the U.S. oil, gas, and mining companies, and you can see, and we've rated them. They're working, there's 52 companies, there's 330 places where they're working on indigenous lands, and you can go in and read all about that.
Wow.
You can see that companies that uphold indigenous rights actually return on their investment 4.3% higher return when they uphold the law rather than when they break it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's more than just compliance. It's about upholding the spirit of the law,
mm-hmm.
and recognizing the self-determination. And so please come see our website and explore that, and then just drop us a note if you have any questions. You can write to information, or you can write to Nick Pelosi, N-P-E-L-O-S-I, at firstpeoples.org.
Thank you so very much for this interview. I hope that you would grant us the opportunity of interviewing you again in the future. It is a treasure to have an expert like you be able to comment on this.
Oh, absolutely. I want to thank you for giving this voice. This is information that we really want people to have.
Thank you again.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. Please keep it tuned to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we're adding local color to your airwaves. And here are some interviews from Standing Rock from September 17th and 18th.
Hi, this is Cindy Gomez-Shemp with 88.1 KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead. And I am standing here today with Karen Von Fossen. And, oh, sorry, what?
Hello.
Yes, I thought you said so. I'm like, I can't hear you. And what was your name again?
Florence Kaplow.
And you guys came here with a whole group of people. I wanted to give you a chance to share with the Fargo-Moorhead audience what you guys are doing here. And I heard you read a letter. I think it's really important people hear about that.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I am the minister for a church in Port Townsend, Washington, which is out on the Olympic Peninsula, called Quimper Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. And I've been aware of this issue. There are a lot of Unitarian churches in the Northwest who have been very active around Native peoples' issues and fossil fuels, including helping with the fight with the Lummi Nation over stopping a coal terminal at Cherry Point, which was successful. So I've been following this, preaching about it. We had a big prayer vigil in Port Townsend. I didn't feel, as a minister, that I could come here, and then I realized my heart was just calling me. The water was calling me, the people were calling me, and I had to come. And I literally decided within 36 hours. And then I put the word out, and five people from the Northwest, including another minister, Reverend Dennis Reynolds from Whidbey Island, joined me. We took the train out to Minot, drove down here. We've been camped here for a couple of days. And I think I can say for all of us that it's transformative to be here. And we will take this back and carry on the work where we're from.
So this is just getting started.
This is just getting started. That's right.
So
did you want me to read the letter?
I want you to read the letter.
Okay. So the other thing I brought with me was a letter that currently is signed by 119 Unitarian Universalist ministers from around the country in Canada. And they are expressing their support for Standing Rock in pretty clear terms. So I can share the letter. Dear Chairman Archambault, we write as Unitarian Universalist faith leaders to let you know that our prayers and support are with you in your courageous actions against the Dakota Access Pipeline. We understand that the pipeline will cross treaty lands, burial grounds, and the Missouri River, the water source for the tribe as well as for millions of others. We are appalled that this project was approved and construction begun without any meaningful consultation with the tribe, counter to federal law and treaty obligations. We support you in your effort to protect your sacred land and water, as well as to create a future for all of our grandchildren. We speak as people of faith, whose principles call us to respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. In these times, when the well-being of our entire ecosystem is threatened, we honor the leadership of Indigenous peoples who are showing us a path towards creating a more beneficial relationship to the Earth and all beings of the Earth. We are writing to you to offer our support and to let you know that we are also contacting our government officials to call on them to follow treaty and federal law obligations and to protect the water, which is so utterly necessary for all life on Earth. Sincerely, 119 Unitarian Universalist Ministers.
Wow. And I have to ask you, I'm gonna throw this one at you, Karen.
All right.
Is it the job, is it the duty of Christian people of faith, to stand with Standing Rock?
Well, thanks for that question, Cindy. I believe it is a duty of my faith. It's a calling of my faith. And my congregation, my Unitarian Universalist congregation in Bismarck Mandan, holds that same view. When Native leaders within our congregation and within our community and around our community speak, we listen. And the water is sacred to all of us. And the voices that say that very clearly are voices that we need to listen to and magnify and follow. So we at our congregation are very, very in support of the camps, of Standing Rock, of all the people who come, of all the actions to stop the pipeline. We're a drop-off spot. We're a go-to place for others around the country who want to come here and share the good word of this place. And what I tell people is, you will be changed more than the change that you can hope to make. That the gift I receive every time I come here is much greater than the gift of serving some cucumber salad or bringing some blankets every time. So when I come, I am fed. I'm fed by the change that is afoot here, and I'm invigorated by it and enlightened by it. I am enlivened by it is the word that I mean, and my congregation is as well. And it's a blessing and a joy to be in solidarity with Standing Rock.
Tell me what you want folks to know about this gathering. Not just people of faith, people of all creeds, people of all colors. What do you want them to know about this camp that they don't know? Because there hasn't been a lot of media here. It's very sad.
The main thing I would like people to know is some of what we've been told about human nature isn't actually true. That human beings are capable of coming together in solidarity, in community, in peace, for one another, for ourselves, for the water, for the earth. That what is happening here shows the best of human nature. Not just the best of Native people, but the best of all people. And that there is something that's happening here that can enliven our imaginations about who we can be. And it's a story that needs to be told.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. Your words are the same words, said a little differently, as the many people I have interviewed about the transformative power of being here, the healing power,
yes,
of being here.
Yes.
And one of the things I noticed that you talked about is that you didn't just bring your support in the form of this letter and the people that you brought here. You've been praying for these people.
Yes.
You've been praying for this change, and you brought them a bowl. Or can you talk about what the other thing, the gift that you brought?
That was actually from Port Townsend.
Oh, okay.
So about a week and a half ago or so, a group of us in Port Townsend really wanted to do something. And so what we decided we would do is hold a prayer vigil on the shores of the Salish Sea, right on the beach. And about almost 100 people showed up. and some local native leaders. A man named Sonny Francis with the Lower Elwha came, and we have native people who are living in Port Townsend. And we got in a huge circle, and I had this big chunk of the most beautiful labradorite, which has all the colors of water in it. And we passed it around this circle. We all stayed for the whole circle, and each person, either silently or out loud, offered a prayer for Standing Rock, for the people who are here, to be strong, to be courageous, and to express their thanks. And that stone journeyed with someone else from Port Townsend to the camp, and then she, because I came unexpectedly, she said, "Will you please find an elder to give this stone to?" And so we were able to offer that stone to the camp to help, one, our own little way, bring a little extra of our love and strength to the camp.
Well, I don't think it's little to pray, because the sacred place is about prayer. It's also been incredibly remarkable to see the hundreds of nations of people, indigenous people, and all of the people that have come here from all over the world to pray over this sacred land, to pray for these people. And those prayers, they matter. That energy matters. What has been the most remarkable experience of being at the camp? First you, Karen, and then we'll come back to you.
Well, I am honored to be able to come to the camp fairly often. We bring lots of supplies and donations, and I'm grateful for that opportunity to do that and give some kind of tangible sign of support, as well as the prayer and the solidarity. For me, I would say one of my favorite moments was the other day when, with other congregants, I was helping to serve lunch. And it was a rainy, rainy, pouring day. And the opportunity to give a little bit of something, a little bit of cucumber salad and a little bit of rice, by way of gratitude for all that is being given to this time and place and all the people here locally, by all who have come and all who live here now, that was a real blessing.
I have to tell you, I just interviewed a man who told me that when people come here and they volunteer their time, he really is thankful for that, because there's been a lot of people that have kind of taken on those roles for lengthy periods of time, and they really appreciate being relieved.
Yes.
So thank you for sharing that story. Can you tell me what the most remarkable experience of being here for you has been?
You know, I want to say one thing first. Before I came, I had a number of people tell me, wow, it's going to be really dangerous there. We have a young person with us. Would that be safe for him? And I just really want to say to your listeners that this is the most deeply peaceful, prayerful, and nonviolent place that I have ever in my life experienced. And I really want people to know that, because I think that's a huge part of the misinformation that's out there. And you see children running around and riding their horses through the fields, and it's not what people think. So that's one thing I really wanted to say, because I think it's very important that that is out there in the world. And then for me, I participated in the walk yesterday. Dennis and I both walked to the pipeline with hundreds of people to honor those who have passed away, who have been disturbed along that pipeline, and to stand there with my prayer with these extraordinary elders doing the most sacred work you can do, was that will go home with me. And I just, my heart just prays that that is the last desecration that occurs here.
Ever, anywhere, yeah.
We are all praying together. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your stories.
Thank you, Cindy.
And I hope to see you guys here again.
I'm sure. Absolutely.
Thank you.
No doubt. See you next time.
Yep.
Standing Rock Medic and Healer Council is making a request for medical supplies. The Standing Rock Medic and Healer Council has compiled a medical supply list that is top priority. It is a short but extremely important list. please consider helping them, those who need urgent medical care, either financially or by sharing the list. They are also requesting Amazon e-gift cards, which they will use to purchase items as needed. On the list, it shows only a $100 option. However, if you click See All Buying Options, it allows purchase of smaller amount gift cards. Enter medichealercouncil@gmail.com. That's medichealercouncil@gmail.com for the recipient email. Their list can be found at tinyurl.com/srmedic-urg-supplies. tinyurl.com/srhealer-space-supplies and tinyurl.com/sr-mhlogistics-supplies. The camp is asking for your support. To donate, go to the Red Warrior Camp, tinyurl.com/redwarriorlegal, and follow them on Twitter at Red Warrior Camp. For more updates on the Sacred Stone Camp, news releases, and ways for you to support the camp or make donations, you can also visit sacredstonecamp.org. Please keep it tuned to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. To support our work here at the station, visit kpppfm.com and go to the donate button. Thank you for tuning in to this special report from Standing Rock. Mini Wiccioni, Water is Life.